Welcome to Tales. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Today, I'm continuing Beauty and the Beast, the classic girl meets monster tale. But this isn't the version of Beauty and the Beast you've heard before. This episode, like the last one, takes place long before Beauty and the Beast met. Last time, we covered the origin story of the Beast. This time, we'll cover the origin story of Beauty. Most fairy tales were not originally suitable for children, and Beauty and the Beast is no exception. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. The original story of Beauty and the Beast features kidnapping, racism, and attempted child murder. Please exercise caution for children under 13. Like last episode, this tale comes from one of the oldest recorded versions of The Beauty and the Beast, the 1740 story La Belle et la Bête, recorded by Madame de Villeneuve. Beauty and the Beast is actually classified as an offshoot of an older tale, Cupid and Psyche. However, Beauty and the Beast evolved to be so distinct that folklorists classify it as a unique archetypal story. Villeneuve's La Belle et la Bête and our episode today include one important narrative element that clearly comes down from Cupid and Psyche. A commoner is granted a special permission to marry above her station. At the end of Cupid and Psyche, Psyche, a human, drinks ambrosia and becomes a goddess so she can marry Cupid, a god. At the end of Beauty and the Beast, Beauty, the daughter of a commoner, isn't allowed to marry the king until a fairy appears and explains that Beauty is actually of royal blood. In both Cupid and Psyche and the original Beauty and the Beast, true love is not enough. The couple also must be of a similar social standing. This week's episode follows relatives of the characters from last week. Queen Cecile's brother, King Ernest, unwittingly falls in love with a fairy and pays dearly for pursuing a relationship with someone of a different social class. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on your favorite podcast directory. A new episode will release every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, subscribe. She said yes by accident. It popped out suddenly, the way thoughts do when you're alone with someone you love. There's something grand about love that removes the filter between your thoughts and your lips. But at this particular moment, she cursed it. Ernest rose from his knee. He was the happiest she'd ever seen him, barring the first time they'd made love, which she also should have said no to. But then he kissed her, and all her thoughts and her lips could say was yes, yes, yes. Ernest pulled back from their passionate kiss. "I suppose I should put the ring on you." "There's a ring? How could the poor son of a farmer afford a ring?" Ernest reached into his shirt and pulled out a stately diamond ring. He must have stolen it. She thought he was an honorable man, but apparently she misjudged. These errors happen to people in love. That's exactly why the elders counseled not to do it. "Alice, I know it's an expensive ring, especially for a shepherdess to wear. I have something to tell you." He rambled on. Her thoughts rushed, trying to think of a way out of the engagement now. Could she retract her yes? Maybe his surprise revelation could be her out. Never mind, that would blow her cover. After all, no girl would say no to the king. "It wasn't safe to tell you before, but Alice, I am your king, ruler of the Fortunate Island." Ernest continued on, explaining the ring was a royal heirloom, a dwarf mined diamond. He invited her to move into the palace immediately. She could bring her flock, too. He expressed undying love, the same love she felt with each beat of her heart. A love forbidden by the most powerful beings in the realm. King Ernest continued, Now that everything's in the open, we'll have our happily ever after. But everything was not in the open. Ernest had no idea that he had just proposed marriage to a fairy. King Ernest was finally getting married. He'd found the love of his life in a poor shepherdess, and unlike his sister Cecile, he did not care one speck about rank, title, or how things ought to be done. He'd wanted to marry Alice in a lavish, extraordinary ceremony. However, Alice insisted she didn't want the attention and splendor of a royal wedding. A humble shepherdess would feel out of place in the pomp and circumstance. And though she was proud to be his queen, she needed a little time to adjust. So Ernest arranged a simple civil ceremony and sent a few royal messengers around the island to inform his citizens that they now had a queen. On the day of their wedding, he got the impression that Alice had something she wanted to tell him. She was in the gardens, picking roses to weave herself a flower crown for the ceremony. He knew Alice loved roses, despite their thorns. He preferred daisies. They were simpler, less risky. Ernest knew women were complicated like roses, so he bluntly asked about her cagey behavior. "What troubles you, my queen?" "It's nothing," she replied. Yes, something was definitely up. He knew from growing up with a sister that nothing always meant something. Alice continued examining roses, walking away from Ernest. He asked again, "Is it because you don't have a family at the ceremony? You know, my family is now your family, and they shall love and support you just as I do." Alice reassured him it had nothing to do with her family or his, and that she wasn't upset by his sister's open disapproval of their break with tradition by having a simple wedding. Ernest kept pushing. There was something Alice wasn't telling him, and it clearly was bothering her. "Would you prefer a bigger ceremony? Or the opposite, we could wait and get married later," he said. Alice looked him straight in the eye. "I should like nothing more than to marry you today, raise your children, and live out the rest of my days beside you as your queen." Ernest felt the truth in her words. Maybe there really wasn't anything wrong. He put his concern aside and enjoyed his wedding day. For 2 years, Alice successfully led a double life. She and Ernest lived in bliss, ruling the fortunate island. Whenever Ernest wasn't looking, she conferred blessings and did good deeds on the island, fulfilling her duties as a fairy. She didn't even mind being called Alice, the alias she'd taken on when she realized that her true name, Plumeria, was a ridiculous thing to call a shepherdess. At the end of 2 years, Alice gave birth to a daughter. She worried for the newborn, the product of a forbidden union. For now, at least, the baby was healthy, intelligent, and had a giggle that caused the local birds to sing along. Ernest remarked that this was odd, but Alice assured him this kind of thing happened sometimes. Everything was rosy. Until she submitted her latest account of good deeds to the Queen of the Fairies. The Queen of the Fairies and her council routinely reviewed the magical activity of younger fairies to ensure they didn't turn towards evil. Alice was positive she'd sail through the review. The Queen of the Fairies, however, saw it differently. She summoned Alice to her palace. The fairy queen started up with a guilt trip.
"Are you familiar with the kingdom of Phalantis? There's a 3-year famine. Their king has gone to war with the neighboring one to conquer better farmland. The soldiers are starving, but they'll fight to the death to feed their families."
"I must tell Cecile," slipped from Alice's mouth by accident.
"Cecile?"
the fairy queen asked. Alice quickly backtracked. She'd once met the queen regent and child king of the kingdom that was under attack. She didn't mention Cecile was her sister-in-law. The fairy queen recalled that Alice had performed a good deed in that kingdom, but she noted that was the only good deed Alice had performed outside of the Fortunate Island.
"Why haven't you left the island?"
Alice scrambled to cover. Cecile, the queen, receives aid from another fairy, so I didn't feel it was my place to return." The fairy queen nodded thoughtfully.
"Ah, yes, Belladonna. I don't approve of her work, but she's even more senior than I am. I cannot control her. Though perhaps if you had provided assistance, there wouldn't be a war between the two kingdoms. You must spread your blessings equally, not just over the Fortunate Island."
Alice swore she would, and the queen gave her the reprieve of a year to fulfill her fairy duties all over the world. They said goodbye, and Alice returned home. Now the real trouble began. How would she manage to travel the world while keeping her identity a secret from her husband? Our story will continue in a moment after the break. And now, back to tales. Queen Alice truly meant to leave the island, but she had a newborn daughter. How could she leave for even a second? Days sped by. Every morning, Alice intended to leave, but then her daughter would make a funny face, or say her first words, or start to walk. And Alice resolved to go tomorrow. A year of tomorrows passed. The fairy queen was shocked and disappointed. In a year, Plumeria, aka Alice, spent less than 15 minutes off the Fortunate Island. This called for an investigation. She sent a pair of fairy spies to the island. It was gorgeous, lush, provincial, a veritable fairyland. Plumeria's work was everywhere. The spy fairies went to the royal palace and saw their rogue fairy kissing the king. And it wasn't just an innocent fairy kiss meant to heal a wound or bestow knowledge. It was a sexual kiss. A very sexual kiss. The scandalized fairies poked around the palace and found further proof that Plumeria had broken their laws. A baby, fast asleep and so beautiful there was no doubt she was part fairy. She giggled at her dreams and birds sang. This child was a monster. The spies reported what they had seen back to the queen, and Plumeria was summoned immediately. Hearing her old name called, Alice locked herself in her chambers, telling the servants she was feeling ill. Ernest was out hunting, so she didn't say goodbye. In a gust of wind, she left the palace. Alice arrived in Fairyland, flickering her wings nervously. The whole place felt emptier, drearier than she recalled. She planned to get out as soon as possible. Until a pair of fairies bound her in magical chains. It appeared she wasn't leaving anytime soon. They brought her before the fairy queen's court. The fairy queen's council read her accused crimes.
Failing to perform good works, lying to the fairy queen, sexual congress with a lesser being. For these charges, Plumeria, you shall be imprisoned.
Alice fell to the opalescent floor, pleading, crying, anything not to be imprisoned. She begged to be cast down as a mortal, stripped of her powers, and allowed to live out just a few decades with her husband and child. While many of the fairies saw signs of true love and pitied their sobbing kinswoman, the oldest and most powerful of all the fairies, the mother of all seasons, rose above them. She frowned, resembling every disappointed and scandalized grandmother ever, all at once.
"If we fail to punish her, many other fairies may ignore their duties and follow her stead, letting war and famine pass untouched and giving birth to half-human monsters."
Alice's heart sank as she saw many of the fairies agreeing, but she dared not speak before the Mother of All Seasons finished.
"She must be punished. I'll state the curse. Plumeria shall be imprisoned. Her husband shall hate her, and her daughter shall marry a monster."
On the Fortunate Island, the servants struggled to deal with a dose of misfortune. Their queen had run off in the night, leaving no note or message. This wasn't like Queen Alice at all. She literally never left. Each felt betrayed, and it worsened when they realized someone would have to inform the king when he returned from the hunt. Why had she left them to do it? How selfish. The task of telling the king fell to the chief butler. He resolved King Ernest should not have to feel his wife's horrid betrayal. He said the queen died, and they buried her immediately, as was their custom. Ernest was devastated, but resolved to be strong for his daughter. He'd bring her up with the memories of her mother. In the meantime, an old, powerful fairy who'd heard of Plumeria's crimes and punishment could not stop thinking about this king. How could he love a fairy? She had failed terribly in her own mission to marry a mortal man. Was it even possible? What made a human take a fairy for a lover? Belladonna had to know. So she found a princess whose kingdom was at war and placed her under a sleeping curse. Then she took the princess's form and made a visit to the Fortunate Island. Belladonna hated taking another's form, but for a short trip, it would do the job. Belladonna, wearing the face of the princess, knocked on the king's door. She had dressed in rags, jumped in a lake, and scratched herself up, so she was looking miserable. When a servant answered, she showed off a royal signet ring, which Belladonna had stolen off the princess, and begged him for asylum. She was granted an audience with King Ernest. Perfect. She'd get him talking about his late wife's charms and be out of this miserable body by midnight. But as soon as Belladonna entered the throne room and saw King Ernest, she fell hopelessly in love with him. Belladonna clearly had a thing for kings. Looking at Ernest, her cool and careful plotting went straight out the window. She deviated from her plan. In return for her asylum, she offered to help educate and raise the baby princess. As for her unpleasant disguise, she'd suffer through it for time with him. Maybe she'd even like the body after the king made her his wife. Ernest was only too happy to help this suffering young woman, who oddly reminded him of his late wife. He couldn't put his finger on it, but there was something about this princess that was just like his Alice. Maybe her hair? He'd figure it out eventually. After all, she'd be tutoring his daughter for the next 16 years. Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. And now, let's continue our story. After a few weeks in the castle, and no special attention from King Ernest, Belladonna got restless. She wanted him to pursue her, to grab her, kiss her, push her up against the castle wall and take her ferociously, or at least talk to her. But King Ernest seemed to have no interest in women. Belladonna needed to make a move. She had a golden spear made up and presented it to him as a token of her gratitude. Ernest admired the spear.
"You didn't have to do this. This is very kind of you."
Belladonna reached for the spear and brushed her fingers along his. King Ernest blushed. Belladonna walked her fingers up his arm and looked him in the eye.
"It must have been so long since you last had a woman in your life."
King Ernest considered her. Belladonna stepped closer. Now she had him. After an intense moment, the king spoke.
"Yes, yes, but I have my daughter. She's all I truly need."
Belladonna suggested Ernest had forgotten what he truly needed. The king revealed he'd sworn a vow of loyalty to his wife. He'd never marry again, and he certainly wouldn't marry a harlot princess with no decorum. Ernest dismissed her. While not falling prey to the seductions of an evil fairy sounds like it boded well for Ernest, it resulted in utter misfortune. King Ernest had offended Belladonna, and when one offends a fairy, the fairy goes out for blood. Belladonna formed a plan, roping in jealous courtiers. These women hated that their king had married a shepherdess and not a noblewoman like themselves. They were self-righteous, and they were malleable. It took only a tiny charm for Belladonna to convince them to take the baby princess into the woods and smother her. By night, the two charmed noblewomen absconded to the woods with the infant princess. She was too good of a baby, they agreed. Something was certainly wrong with her. She didn't cry or scream as they carried her out of the palace. She snored a little, but didn't seem to care about the cold wind. They trekked through the forest, convinced they'd saved their island from the future rule of a bastard. For no way was the king's marriage to a commoner legitimate. There hadn't even been a royal wedding. The king said there'd be a simple ceremony, but they hadn't seen it or been invited. So who's to prove it happened at all? Here, the noblewomen were deep enough. The tiny babe would be eaten by animals before anyone could find the body. The women began undressing her, so not a scrap of royal clothing would be found. They could use the illegitimate baby's blanket to plug her mouth and nose. Wait, was that someone coming? The noblewomen looked at each other, worried. The bear was upon them in an instant. It clawed the first noblewoman and bit her arm. She yanked her arm from its mouth, her hand and forearm ripped off. But she was alive. Bleeding rapidly, she rushed after her companion. Neither thought to grab the baby. The bear chased, just a few feet behind one woman and a few inches behind the other. The first noblewoman collapsed, energy sapped from blood loss. Without aid, she'd be dead in an hour. The bear charged past her, chasing the second noblewoman through the trees. The second noblewoman scrambled out of the bear's sight and out of the forest. Panting, she composed herself. Her friend was certainly dead. She'd barely escaped with her own life. The bear, or some other dreadful creature, would certainly eat the baby. It was as good as dead. There was no point in going back. She would never speak of this day again. She did, however, tell Belladonna that the deed was done. Belladonna, satisfied in her vengeance, returned to her palace. Back in the forest, the bear had indeed gone back for the princess. The bear ambled toward the baby, now awake and crying. It hovered over the tiny, helpless child. It dropped down, sniffing her. The bear opened its bloody maw and transformed into the fairy Delphine. Delphine, relieved to no longer be a bear, picked up the baby princess, wrapped her in a blanket, and snuggled her. The princess was a bit cold, but she'd survive. The trouble was, where? Delphine could smell a fairy's plot from 10 leagues away, and this plot had Belladonna written all over it. If she returned the princess to her father, Belladonna would finish the job some other way. The poor child shouldn't have to pay for the sins of her fairy mother. Delphine would find her a new home, secret from even the king. To save his daughter, King Ernest would have to go through life thinking she was dead. After some time, Delphine found a merchant and his wife with a sick baby. Delphine did her best to save the child, but she'd arrived too late. However, this baby was about the same age as the baby princess, so Delphine simply swapped the babies. She vanished the corpse of the merchant's child. Then she handed the princess to the merchant and his wife, claiming she'd healed their child. They asked why their baby looked different.
Fairy magic can alter a child's appearance, but she shall live a blessed and happy life and bring you both great joy.
The merchant and his wife rejoiced. Delphine sighed in relief. They'd raise the child as their own, because they thought she was their own. Barring disaster, the little princess would have a safe and happy childhood. Just then, the fairy recalled the little princess was cursed to marry a monster, and she had an idea. There was one monster in particular who needed a wife. In 15 or 16 years, she'd see about introducing the beauty and the beast. Next time, we'll continue the tale of Beauty and the Beast. Beauty finally meets the Beast, but he offers an unexpected proposal, and she discovers his castle is not what it looks like. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory, or listen on Parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star review. Thank you for listening. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Carrie Murphy. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Maggie Admire. I'm Vanessa Richardson.